Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Hey, my friends, you're listening to Roots, Race, and Culture, the podcast from PBS Utah.
If you like what you hear, we hope you'll subscribe, leave us a review, and share with your friends.
All right, now let's get this thing started.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Daner Gerald.
And I'm Lonzo Liggins. Many people ask me from out of state, Lonzo, what's there to do in Utah? My answer is inevitably the same. Utah is an outdoor state. Although we do have some fun options for a nightlife, people primarily come here for the outdoors.
And I can say it's definitely been a part of my experience living here, but the great outdoors hasn't always been so inclusive. As a matter of fact, according to wilderness.org, only 11% of Hispanics and 9% of Blacks engage in outdoor recreation, compared to 72% of their white counterparts. So why is this? Has there been a history of segregation and exclusion from outdoor recreation? Why does it seem that BIPOC communities just avoid the outdoors? Do they not feel safe? Today, we have the perfect guests to unravel these mysteries. And we would like to welcome them now.
Yes.
So thank you guys for joining us on the show.
Yes, welcome guys. It's so great to have you. Hey, Ashley, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure, thanks for having me. My name is Ashley Cleveland. I am an environmental scientist at heart and a city planner by day. I go by Outdoor Auntie, and I am your local outdoor advocate.
Awesome. So explain, what's Outdoor Auntie? Tell us about
that. Tell us about that. Well, of course, you know, the outdoors, I advocate for the outdoors, but I went with the auntie plug because all my family's from Georgia and the aunties in my community are really, really important. They're your biggest cheerleaders. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make sure I was everyone's biggest cheerleader as we're a family in the outdoors.
Awesome. Oh, I knew you were from the South that. When you said auntie.
Yeah.
That's how my family pronounces it.
Mine too. How about you, Esteban?
So my name is Esteban Benitez Moreno. I'm an immigrant from Mexico, and I've built my career around community health education and community engagement. I became involved with Latino Outdoors after a colleague decided to bring the chapter here to Utah. Latino Outdoors was founded 10 years ago in 2013 in California and has expanded to over 30 locations. And its mission has been able to be carried out through its CEO, its staff, and a collective network of chapters throughout the United States. And our main mission is to engage and connect our community with the outdoors, both the Latino and Latina community, as well as embracing our culture and our history and family values within the work that we do.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about that a little later.
Love too. That intro.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
that was a fiery intro.
Well, I'd like to jump over to you, Ashley, because in discussions we've had previously, you told us about some difficult times that you had growing up in California. And I'd like to hear a little bit about that and maybe know if that influenced your love for the environment.
Oh, for sure. So, as I said, both sides of my family are from Atlanta. My mom moved us out to California when I was very young, and we moved around a lot growing up. Unfortunately, there was a bout in time in my childhood where we experienced chronic homelessness, meaning that you don't have a permanent address for more than a year at a time. And in one of these instances, we wind up staying at a family shelter in San Francisco, and they had a wonderful program where for the summer, they would send you to a few summer camps while your parents could look for work and not necessarily worry about you if you're at a certain age. And during that time, I, of course, was the only Black girl on the trip. And there was one park ranger who was a woman, who was the education park ranger, who had to deal with all of us rambunctious kids, and she let me be her shadow. Because at that time, I was actually really quiet and introverted, surprise. But through that experience at Sequoia National Park and in the Redwood Forest, I think that really ignited my love for just ecology and the environment. And, you know, 10 years later, I wind up becoming a park ranger at Channel Islands National Park. And I think it's because of that experience that I was able to draw back from.
Where was the national park?
Channel Islands National Park.
Oh, okay. Where's that? I haven't heard of that one.
That's in Southern California. It's in Ventura County. There are 5 islands located off the coast of Ventura County, and I worked on 3 of them as an ecologist for a couple of years.
Wow, what an experience.
Yeah.
So, that seems like it definitely had an influence on you. So, I mean, you're not afraid.
No. I mean, it depends on where I'm at, right? Because there's different habitats. I don't mess with moose.
Oh, yeah. I've walked by many a moose before, and I've yet to be stomped or trampled, but I do get pretty nervous when they're around.
Moose scare me more than the bears, I'll tell you that much, except if it's a brown bear. But Esteban, tell us about your journey to the outdoors. What got you interested in being an outdoor enthusiast, so to speak?
My family played a huge role in this. You know, growing up, when we immigrated to the United States, we came with nothing. And our vacations were going outdoors, going camping, visiting national parks. And it was a great opportunity for all of us to connect as a family, talk to each other, enjoy days of food and eating. And it just had a lasting impression on me. You know, I still remember one day coming home and my parents letting us know, let's go on a spontaneous trip anywhere. And they're like, let's go to Yellowstone National Park, which was one of my first national parks that I visited. And since then, I've just have had this passion to explore all the wonderful things that our community has to offer. And when I got involved with Latino Outdoors, one of the things that stood out to me was that over 80% of our participants attend our events with their family members. So many people in our community have that similar experience of wanting to bond and connect with their families while in the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. That's really fantastic. And you know, you bring up this desire in your family and community to connect outdoors, which has kind of been a traditional thing for a lot of ethnic communities. Now, what I find fascinating is we've been doing some research on these national parks, and according to Professor Kang J. Lee, who's here at the University of Utah, when the Pilgrims first came here way back in like Plymouth Rock, they considered like the wilderness area to be this wild thing that needed to be tamed and cultivated. And then somewhere around the 18th century, Walt Whitman and Henry David Thoreau started romanticizing the outdoors, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so then all of a sudden for these white Americans, these Anglo-Americans, it became this thing that, oh, well, we need to go out and do this. And then Civil War comes along, and then Yellowstone Park becomes our first national park.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the amazing thing about you being a park ranger there. Those were segregated at the time, all the way up to as late as the 50s.
Yeah.
So this whole concept of people going outdoors, it was kind of exclusively for these white people who were like, well, we want to escape out of the cities where all these immigrants are and these laborers and lower class people of color sort of thing. And so I think that really had a big impact on the way we view it here as people of color in America.
Which surprised me because I thought that that wouldn't be a place.
In Shenandoah National Park?
I just thought with segregation, it was just like restaurants, movie theaters, bathrooms.
Water fountains.
Yep.
And, oh, yeah.
And that was it. But then all of a sudden to find out that y'all can't go to the park with us.
Right.
you can't.
Right.
We go over here. It's like, we're outdoors. What's the big deal?
How do you know? Segregate the outdoors?
Right. And so, and it makes a lot of sense. What do you two think about that? What do you think about it, Ashley?
Well, I'm a city planner by trade, so that isn't new to me because at the end of the day, this is public land. You know, America has a really great way of creating laws to manage things. Mm-hmm. And this is just one more way of taming the wild, if you will. Right. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about public lands and parks and public pools and national parks, they aren't exclusive from that. I know our history has us showing those white only signs in restaurants and buildings and libraries and schools, but it also includes recreation spaces.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, and we'll talk a little bit about swimming later as well. But you also volunteer at an organization. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I've been a Salt Lake City resident for 10 years, and I've been an Outdoor Afro network leader for the past 6 years. Outdoor Afro, much like Latino Outdoors, has been around for 10 years, and we have over 180 volunteer leaders like myself across the U.S., and our whole task is, you know, where Black people and nature meet. So any event once a month, you can find anywhere from 7 to 30 Black people outside with me doing a myriad of activities here in Utah.
Oh, wow, that's really awesome. I mean, you think about 10 years ago that these organizations started, that's like after 2000. I mean, it took that long for us to say, you know what, let's take this space and this beautiful thing and claim it for ourselves and help people get out and enjoy it. There are plenty of young kids, both Latino and Latina and people of color, black, who have lived in inner cities their whole lives and have never seen anything remotely beyond the concrete jungle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's people. Look, I grew up here in Utah. My dad was a huge homebody. So I never even went up to Big Cottonwood Canyon or Little Cottonwood Canyon. I never even saw it out there. I just played around in the city. That was it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I was probably 17 years old that I went up to Mill Creek Canyon for the first time. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. Of course, it was at night and we were all going up there to drink beer. But it was still crazy driving up, you know. But there's a lot of people that are even here in the mecca of outdoors and they don't get a chance to.
Yeah.
You're literally just about anywhere on the Wasatch Front, that sort of Salt Lake area, you know, 40, 50 miles north or south from there. You're probably 20 minutes away from being away from it all, yeah, no matter where you live, which is amazing. And so I'm kind of curious, what sort of activities do you do when you take people out and you do your activities with the community?
Yeah, Latino Outdoors wants to offer a range of activities that all people can do either by themselves, with family members, in a variety of settings. You know, we've done anything from nature journaling, a skill that can help guide people out to the outdoors, to outings where people are learning how to snowshoe, bike, hiking, you name it. You know, we've been really fortunate that as we have started our chapter here in Utah, there's also been a rise of other organizations that are BIPOC-led that have started and have identified that there is a need for us to build community, have joy, and experience moments that we can cherish together as a community. And, you know, within our work as Latino Outdoors, we've been able to collaborate with many community partners to bring about these events, either through collaborating and donating their time or donating physical things like materials or equipment that our community members can use after they have learned an activity.
That's huge.
Mm. So about this friction, do you guys feel that there's maybe a little bit of a negative stigma about being outside in nature among these communities of color? Do you feel like?
Well, in my opinion, at least, you know, I can only speak for the Black community, of course. I feel like we have a lost history, right? Okay. One thing that I have a tendency to talk to our Salt Lakers and our Black Utahns about is that as African people, we have a history with nature. I mean, all humans do, right? When we came over here to the U.S., we brought that with us. And even in the early histories of the U.S., we were agriculturalists. Mm-hmm. So we've always been close to nature and, you know, knowing how to navigate through the northern stars and, you know, things of that nature with like Harriet Tubman. So that's one reminder that I always have. Here, I think that, you know, you have to get used to just the mountain ranges in the physical space of Utah because it can be really intimidating to get started. And so it's more so of an educational component that we need to share in our own vernacular to make people more comfortable in giving it a try. And then, you know, I don't want to also negate the fact that there are plenty of Black people in Utah who are avid outdoorsmen.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Avid, like very experienced fishermen, you know, wildland ranger guides. Like, we're out here.
Snowboarders.
Yes, yeah. We're out here.
There's a lot of it. No, I totally agree with what you're talking about. And Esteban, I mean, we see those statistics, we see those numbers. You know, we see 9% in the Black community, 11% in the Hispanic community. Why do you think that's the case in the Hispanic community that those numbers are so low?
There's a wide range of reasons that are affecting those numbers. You know, everything from historical access barriers that we've talked about, from segregation, you know, Native people being relocated from their land, and other political issues that are happening both in the United States, in our country, and globally. You know, I think of individuals that I have come across within my life and they have shared their stories with the outdoors. You know, one of my best friends once shared that camping was an abnormal concept to them. You know, in their experience, they related camping to the concentration camps that they had to stay at in their country, you know? And the idea of people wanting to go out there for fun seemed unique and different than what they were used to. I've talked to individuals who had recently immigrated to the United States, and they're more focused on learning the culture, the country, and building that community and that sense of safety, you know, trying to figure out the laws and how that might affect them in this country. Mm-hmm. So I think there historically have been a lot of barriers, and we also have to take into account socioeconomic status of individuals. Yeah. Here in Utah, we have the privilege of having many national parks and the mountains right by us. Right. And at the same time, there's a cost associated with it.
Right, right.
From passes, equipment, mm-hmm. and when many families are living paycheck to paycheck or having multiple jobs, it makes it difficult.
Yeah, you have time and money, you need both of those.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where we wanna change the narrative of what it means to be outdoorsy. Yes. Outdoorsy doesn't mean having to go to our mountains every day, go on a hike, going visiting all these national parks. Yeah. Our communities have historically been connected to the land for medicine, through mm-hmm. traditions, mm-hmm. and we can connect to nature and be outdoorsy. Yeah. From our neighborhoods, our homes, as it can be something as simple as going outside for a walk, tending to a garden in your backyard, or learning about the herbs and plants that are just in your community.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. great. That's really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so important. We've kind of lost that to a certain extent, you know, like our connection. And I think that there can be a stigma in our community. Don't you think, Ashley, with us referring to those activities, oh, we don't want to do that because that's a white activity,
oh, yeah.
right?
Right.
So what kind of things do you hear from African-Americans when it comes to those stigmas?
Yeah, I think that a lot of it is fear-based. Like I said, you know, when I usually introduce someone to camping for the first time, they're usually afraid. If it's an adult, it's their first time camping, they're like, wait, so you just like sleep out here with a tent? Like you intentionally go outside, you leave your home, and you go outside here with all these bugs and all these unknowns, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they do sometimes come with the baggage of this is white people stuff. And I think that's because that's how things have been marketed to us.
Yes.
We have been the invisible outdoor enthusiast for so many years in so many playing fields, right? We talk about Hidden Colors and all these other movies popping up when there's been plenty of us participating. We just haven't been, you know, on the REI ads or
right,
anything
right,
like
right.
that.
That's very true. Who is it being marketed to has a big impact on the people's perception of who it's for, right? And, you know, you mentioned a couple things. I got some funny stories. I took my parents camping because I started camping, you know, later on in life. And so we're in like a place that my wife's family has up in Idaho, and it's got like, you know, cabins and like, you know, pretty rustic, rudimentary things, but it's a shelter, you know. And my dad, they went camping the first time, like, you know, 10 years ago, ever in their life. Mm-hmm. And middle of the night, he's got to go to the bathroom, right? So, and there's like, you know, there's an outhouse and there's, you know, the little porta potties out there. And he was so scared to go outside. He just like cracked the door open and just went to the bathroom from inside.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, yeah. He was just full of fear. But, you know, another story that he told me was about growing up down in South, segregated Mississippi, Hattiesburg, Mississippi. They had to drive 30 miles away to go to a swimming pool that they were allowed to go into. And he remembers standing there and looking and seeing all these black people swimming and just his jaw on the floor. And, you know, they had a great time and, you know, he learned how to swim and he also, you know, had ice cream and all these great things. You know, I, on the other hand, ended up being an All-American diver in college, right? I was on the swim team, high school and college. And to this day though, most of my family does not know how to swim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they grew up in that era. And that's a critical life skill. You know what I mean?
Over swimming. You know, we think of something as simple as swimming as just a simple leisure activity that I do 3-4 times a week. Mm. But yet there were people that have fought to just be in a swimming pool. And, you know, it really makes you think about some of these fears in our community when it comes to the outdoors and where it's rooted. Because, you know, prior to even doing research on this episode, I just always thought we just didn't go to the outdoors. Just black folks, Hispanic folks, we just referred to veer away from the outdoors. But when you see that there's a history to it, you see that there's a history to people not doing it, we see that there's more to it than meets the eye. So the question is, other than the organizations that you guys are volunteering for, are there other ways that we can encourage people of color, Hispanics and blacks, to be out in the outdoors if we're not a part of an organization like me? What could I do to go, you know, encourage folks other than just telling them?
I'd say start in your neighborhood. Start simple, start small. Mm-hmm. Typically, if you have children in your life, so that makes it a little bit easier to go to a park. That's a good way to be outdoorsy. Maybe ride a bike. That's a good way to also take another step and, you know, visit maybe a nature trail. Mm-hmm. Maybe find other affinity groups, like you mentioned, you know, over the past several years, Outdoor Afro has been here, and then others have popped up over the past 3 or 4. Maybe hang out with them. You know, you don't always have to be in an affinity group that is participating from your, you know, community. You can go and join others too.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Esteban?
So the first thing I think of is similar to what you said, focusing primarily on those closest to us at first. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times people around us have the same feelings of uncertainty of how to connect to the outdoors. Mm-hmm. And I would also encourage people to explore what their community has to offer. I know I have experienced many moments where I've attended community events and have learned of many environmental groups that are working on conservation here in Utah. Mm-hmm. And has led me to become more informed of the policies that are happening in our Utah. And when more of us are coming together and learning about these things, we can build a stronger collective movement to protect our environment, as well as bringing in new perspectives and ideas to make sure that the policies that are being pushed in our government are equitable and are keeping our communities in mind as well.
That's great.
Exactly. Yeah, what kind of policies are you thinking about that don't keep our community in mind?
Oh.
This is the discussion's over.
Yeah.
I know for me, you know, I live on the west side. West Valley has always been my home, and air pollution is something that hasn't always been prioritized as much as I would have liked. Mm-hmm. You know, with the expansion of the airport, that was a big issue that a lot of people in the community were advocating for. Like, how are we protecting both the Great Salt Lake and the quality of air for the people that live on the west side?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I agree. I live in West Valley too. And there's, I used to live in Murray. I lived in Murray for 12 years. I grew up in Sugar House. And there's a lot more outdoor stuff to do in like Murray and Sugar House than there is in West Valley. Like, I struggle to find things to do. And I ask myself sometimes, is it because the people don't want it, or is it because they just decided not to have those types of things out here? Or is it a blend?
I would think that environmental racism would have to play a role in that. When you look at the history of different communities, we see that lower income communities, oftentimes which house more people of color, are the places where factories are being built and other mm-hmm. companies that are contributing to the pollution or destruction of land.
Right. Yeah.
And I'd probably hop in there and say, you know, we really care about civic engagement, and what that means is getting people civically involved in the way that they can give meaningful feedback. And I think that, you know, for environmental justice to work, for access to do, or a lack of access to do what it needs to do, municipalities and laws and policies need to make sure that those people are not there at the table when decisions are being made. So as much as we like to think of it as like, oh, you know, it's the outdoors, it's not that serious, it has really, really lasting effects on people's ability to thrive and live long and healthy lives. There's been so many studies, you know, where we look at redlining, where highways are dividing a city. The people who live on the east or west side, furthest away from the highway or where a lot of the air pollution is, they live longer lives. Mm-hmm. So in my eyes, I feel like one of the ways to be really involved, not just outdoor recreation, but health and access, is making sure that you're involved in your civics. And so go to your community council meetings, attend your city council meetings, push for those to be more inclusive and kid friendly, and, you know, host it at times that fit your community schedule. Mm-hmm. And also maybe become some of those people.
Right.
Yeah.
When we share our stories, we're really driving this change. At Latino Outdoors, we have this program that we call Yo Cuento, which translates to many different things. It could translate to I count or I tell a story. Mm-hmm. And it's this program where we're uplifting the voices of people in our community to share their experiences, connecting to nature, the activities that they enjoy, as well as the issues that are important to them and their communities.
We'll get back to this conversation on Roots, Race, and Culture in just a moment.
PBS Utah is also home to other dynamic podcasts. More Than Half covers some of the most challenging issues facing women in Utah and how it takes all of us to make change happen. Here's a clip from the episode, A Separate Space.
I don't think a lot of people realize that it's just not common for people of color, especially women of color, to see themselves in the stories that, you know, we're reading.
Subscribe to More Than Half wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, back to Roots, Race, and Culture from PBS Utah.
So, I have a question about the conservation thing that you brought up. And you've been an ecologist in the past and national parks and all that great stuff. So is there a benefit to conservation by getting younger people of color, black people, particularly in your case, out into nature? Does that help with conservation?
I think that it's a multi-generational approach. Right. Like I obviously was from a population of a young child who I was able to hop into the movement because they got me young. Yeah. But what does that say for my uncle and my mother and my grandmother? Right.
Gotcha.
We are one of the last few generations that are going to be able to do anything about climate change and sustainability. So if we don't get the whole family on board, there's going to be some very negative externalities that come from that. Mm-hmm. So my answer would be a multi-familial approach, so hosting family-friendly events that have, you know, your older community members there along with the people who are parents and caregivers and teenagers and kids. That's you got to get everybody on board.
Well, and again, like my son, he goes to school and at this college and he's on his track team and he took some of his other friends on the track team out into a hike and out to nature to this river out in California and they were jumping. And, you know, these are two black kids who he took with him who were from the inner city. And they were like, said the exact same thing you said earlier, Lonzo. They're like, oh, man, we're going to do this white people activity. And they were scared and they were nervous. And he's been doing this sort of stuff his whole life.
You say that stuff, too.
Oh no!
You say that to me all the time. You're like, man, you doing that white man stuff.
So he ended up like noticing that even though they kind of acted like, oh man, this is weird and crazy, he said they had a smile on their face the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, are they going to do it again? So that's the thing is you have this opportunity there to help people make that transition and have that understanding. And I want to go into some of the benefits that are...
Yeah, because there's a lot of good benefits, mental health benefits to being in the outdoors. You two can agree, right? Yep. I mean, I know with me, when I go into the outdoors, I get zen-like. I mean, I can... And the beautiful thing is because we live in Utah, you can be up there in 15 minutes. I can be like, man, I don't want to hear from anyone, no kids, spouses.
Get away! Some of the benefits that come from being outdoors, emotionally benefits, we have reduced stress, improved mood, increased positive emotions, and a decrease of anxiety.
Yes, all of which I feel.
Yeah, and that's like, this is like, they study this stuff, so we're not just throwing this out there. And you can feel it, it's pretty tangible.
It is.
And now there's an emerging field called environmental neuroscience, mm-hmm. where they're not just studying the emotional benefits, but also the cognitive benefits mm-hmm. that come from being outdoors. And they are amazed and shocked at what's happening. So here's some examples here. They've literally studied and found out being outdoors in nature for anywhere from as little as 40 seconds to, you know, 4 days or whatever, your perception, reasoning skills, your memory, judgment, imagination, creativity, and problem solving. All of these things improve just from having access and being out in nature. And it for one of the studies that I saw, this was amazing. They were giving people a test, right? These kids, and so they had them look outside on this nature roof that had, you know, trees and everything, just 40 seconds. And in 40 seconds, those people made less mistakes on the test after looking outside. Mm. They did the same thing with people that just looked out into like an urban environment. Mm. Didn't have an impact at all. And so they've been studying this and finding there's certain aspects to what's out in nature that really help to create this effect in your brain. One of them is this idea of fractals. And it's this repeating pattern that you see in nature. Yeah. That's a naturally occurring thing. Looking up at some trees and sort of a snowflake kind of pattern.
Do you guys get this same type of feeling?
Yes, I do. It's soothing. It's definitely soothing.
Yeah.
That's what keeps me going.
Yeah. Yeah. And so these things have like major, major effects on your cognitive ability in your brain. Yeah. And then so I go back to like Walt Whitman and Mark Twain and these people who were genius.
Thoreau, yeah.
Henry David Thoreau, yeah. And Mark Twain as well. You wonder if their writing was impacted and they were so creative and so good because they spent so much time outdoors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it impacted that.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? What do you think, Esteban?
Yeah,
I mean, the overall quality of life is definitely one of the main reasons why people go outdoors. We see that physical and mental health well-being becoming better by spending time outdoors, as well as just being able to connect with others socially. Mm-hmm. That social health is just as crucial as physical and emotional health. And you know, as people are going outdoors, they're gaining other benefits as well from learning new skills, learning more things about what nature has to offer. Foraging for food, yeah. When people come to Latino outdoors outings, we've seen that over 75% of people are trying that activity for the very first time. And they leave with a sense of community, you know, making new friends along the way, learning new skills, community resources and partnerships. And this is something that a lot of times isn't talked about in our communities. Like, I never would have thought of a career in the outdoors when I was younger, you know? And there's so many ways that we could work in the outdoors. And through Latino Outdoors, we try to share those experiences through our Crecemos program so that people can build these leadership opportunities and professional development to raise awareness of all these possibilities that exist that aren't talked about.
But is it a one and done? I mean, do you take them on this great experience and then they never do it again?
What? I hope not. That's not what I consider to be successful, right? So when we're talking about Henry David Thoreau and these whole, you know, new movements of relationship with nature, they call it the transcendentalist movement or the enlightenment period for a reason. You know, there's a reason why as a human that breaks you open. So for Outdoor Afro Salt Lake City, our network in particular, I consider it to be successful when I have led an engagement, say, canyoneering. We went canyoneering for the first time. We partnered with another nonprofit for an affinity group called Canyoneering Tricks. And we spent some time together to build some trust in ways that we can be more culturally competent with each other so that we could get out and do that together. And our first time ever, we had 15 Black people rappelling over 150 feet down canyon walls for the first time.
Wow.
And what I consider to be success is I'm afraid of heights. I'm not going to do that again. Yeah. But if they continue to go with Canyoneering Chicks or they pick up a climbing membership at, you know, a climbing gym or continue to, you know, have that relationship on their own, that's what I consider to be successful. My whole role as an outdoor leader is to inspire you to lead yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, yeah. Yes, people usually come to me. I take requests like a DJ. Okay. But after we do that, I love seeing people on social media having their own relationship and doing things on their own or together.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ashley. You and I are going to sit at the bottom of that canyon. We're going to hang out. We're going to spread a blanket. We're going to watch them 150 feet up and say, good luck.
I'm your auntie. I will cheer you on.
Please.
I'll meet you there and I will cheer you on.
We will cheer each other on. I'm curious to hear what your both of your favorite activities are. Like, what are your favorite outdoor activities?
Goodness. It depends on who I'm with. So if I'm with my homegirls, I probably love to do some like full moon hikes and play like a really like kind of ratchet playlist. Like that brings us in. But if I'm with my daughter, you know, she's 6 years old, we really enjoy smaller engagements where we can talk with other kids and learn more about biology. So we love hanging out at the community garden, looking at ladybugs, talking about, you know, why it's important to, you know, have really good soil and stuff like that. And if I'm with like elderly people or my mom, I love just like nature walks because that's when I get some of that wisdom, you know, so we can share some of that history, so we can learn about our Black history here. Mm-hmm. You know, it opens up that moment for opportunity.
Yeah.
That's great.
What about you, Esteban?
My most joyous moments are when I'm in water. Any activity that involves being in the water, I am in this state of absolute bliss and joy, you know, whether that be swimming, kayaking, or just sitting there in the water, like, yeah. I'm happy. Along with that, spending time with my family, camping, you know, it's always a nice time to reconnect, especially as we get older and we're all going our different ways with our careers, our lives. It's nice to come back together and have those opportunities to see where everyone is at in their life and what they're up to.
Yeah. That's great. You know, the naturally occurring curved lines was another aspect in nature that they talked about has an impact on you emotionally and cognitively. Mm-hmm. So water is a perfect example of experiencing that. That's really cool.
Yeah, you know, and for me, I gotta be honest, like you guys were talking about earlier, I don't like the expensive price of doing some of the outdoor stuff. Like, I don't like to go out and go skiing or snowboarding. By the time you look at the bill, and I got kids, so I got to drag in all the kids. I'm like, man, you're talking about $1,500, man. You know, yeah, how much money you got me spending here? But the thing that I enjoy in Utah especially, because I love to go to southern Utah, I love to go up in the mountains, is you can just take a hike.
Yeah.
You can take a free hike up to the mountains, and you can walk around, and like you said, you can look at the plants, you can look at the soil, you can look at the rocks. Yeah. I like looking at rocks, I'm a bit of a rock nerd. And I like to just, you know, kind of wander out. And even if you do that for just half an hour, three times a week, the benefits to that are phenomenal. Yeah. And I think that's amazing. Yeah, I'm a big fan of looking at the soil stuff too.
So Lonzo, that is a perfect segue. I went out in the mountains because I got to discover hiking and even in the snow, because an activity that I've picked up has pulled me into this sort of experience.
Was this recently?
Yes. So
I forgot it's snow.
Let me just read this here. Like, so I'm explaining some moments that I've had. I've had moments of extra lucidity when everything around me felt like it was crystal clear. My senses of smell, touch, hearing, sight were all hyper-tuned, and I was taking in everything all together in a complete, perfect clarity. It just happens gradually, then a switch flips, and suddenly you experience everything around you in an overwhelming, peaceful, but razor-sharp way. It lasts for a while until you start thinking again, but mostly you stop thinking and just sense this profound, sublime state of being where you are. Mm. It's hard to hold onto for a long time. It's kind of like sand in your hand. But the only other time that in my life that I've ever experienced these hyper-sensational moments were while I was playing outside as a child. But I've had these moments because one of the activities I did was I walk around with a bow. And I've yet to actually bring anything else home besides my bow. But
see, I want to get a camera. I want to get a camera, and I want to follow you around with a bow.
Oh, well, it's super fun. It goes back to that, like, connection to, like, our indigenous...
With the dreadlocks. You look like Predator
ancestry
out there.
Yeah. Somebody thought I was, like, had a bunch of, like, camouflage makeup on, and then when he got closer, he was like, oh, it's a black guy.
Oh, it's just your face. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, like, you have to really pay attention to what's going on, the signs, and look for, you know, some evidence of animals. You have to be very quiet, because they have really good hearing, and they have a good sense of smell, too, so you got to get all the scent off of you. But in the process of doing that, just walking around, all of a sudden, this description that I had would just sort of come over me, and I would... And you know what? It was this sort of scary feeling where I thought, okay, I am totally, like, my spidey senses are seriously tingling. Is there a cougar following me or something? Like, what's going on?
That reminds me. This is what I want to ask you guys. Have you ever had, now, because, you know, there's a lot of fear in our communities when it comes to being in the outdoors. Yeah. Have you ever had an encounter in the outdoors, either of you, that has made you second guess what you're doing?
Oh, like, going outside?
Yeah. Like, I mean, look, we've all had, well, at least I've had, like, an encounter with some type of an animal.
Yeah.
And if you have, you know, not only tell us about it, but, you know, what could people do to dispel those fears? Because a lot of it's myths, right?
Yes,
go ahead.
So, you know, I mentioned I was an ecologist for some time. So my undergrad, I was an environmental scientist. And I spent a lot of my years in college being a field biologist. So I was out at different random times of the day on like Navy property, National Park Service property, private property, doing surveys. And I was usually out alone. So, you know, I'm a young Black woman by myself in the middle of nowhere with no weapons, just binoculars.
That's a scary movie.
Yes, me and binoculars in broad daylight. But there have been times where I have accidentally like stepped over the largest rattlesnake I've ever seen in my life in California. But I did have to know, I did become more educated in knowing that since I was out early in the morning, it wasn't very like active because it was sleepy. So I walked over it in the morning when it was cold. So I didn't like wake it up or its rattler or anything, but it did really scare me. So if I had have been out on a trail midday when the sun is out, then I probably would have been more susceptible to getting bit or even just hearing the rattle.
Which is scary.
Yes. There's another time that's not necessarily having to do with an animal, but more so just with the elements. I went river rafting for the first time, and so we bring up swimming, right?
Yeah.
I've known how to swim for a long time because my mom took me to the YWCA, and I was able to learn at a public pool, but that doesn't mean if you know how to swim in a pool, you know how to swim in the ocean.
In
you know how
river.
To swim
yeah.
in a river.
Yeah, oh
you
yeah.
know?
Current is fierce.
So I got my behind out in my life jacket, of course, and I hopped in a current, and that was kind of scary. I was like, there's nothing I can do to control this. I have to just like go with the wave.
Yeah.
What about you, Esteban?
Oh, I'm someone who hasn't experienced too many of those moments. I feel like I tend to prepare beforehand because I'm naturally a person that likes to do the research before they go do something. The only experience that I could think of was a moment where my partner and I had just finished exploring Canyonlands National Park, and it got dark outside. And we learned that Arches National Park is open in the evening, so we're like, let's just try to hike to Arches in the dark.
Ooh.
And 3 minutes into the hike, we're like, nope, we are not prepared. We start hearing howling and all these noises, and we're like, we're making a bad mistake. Like, we need to wait until we're better prepared to be able to do this hike.
Yeah, I have heard those noises before, the howling of the coyotes. And of course, there's always those really scary, weird stories of skinwalkers and things like that. And you get really a little nervous. But
so my question for both of you is, there's a lot of myths, you know, in our communities about the fears. Like, I hear a lot of Black folks that say, man, I ain't going out in the woods. I don't want to be dealing with bears and mountain lions. How can we dispel those myths and let people know that, yeah, there are those things out there, but what is the chances of that actually happening?
I think it's sharing stories, you know, like when you're not on the trail, when you're at like, you know, first Fridays at Black Chamber or something, having a beer with everyone else, that's when you have your time to say, you know, I had an adventure for the first time and I got to see, I went to Death Valley National Park and I got to see these amazing group of wild burros, you know, like running across the plains under blue moonlight, you know. You can romanticize some of that by like storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I think our culture is really good at that. We probably just need to do more of it, you know. There's so many instances where you can seek out beautiful experiences in nature having to do with wild animals while also respecting their boundaries, because I think we're really good as a community.
Right.
We're not going to roll up on a bison that close, but
right. Yeah.
We're really good at, you know, enjoying them from a distance.
That's the difference between white folks and Black folks. White folks get closer to the animal, Black folks get further away.
Yeah. I can love you from over here.
What about you, Esteban?
Yeah, I would say that really taking the time to learn about the place or activity that you are wanting to do. And I would also encourage people to seek out events or opportunities that people can do with groups like Outdoor Afro, Latino Outdoors, so that you can learn together as a group and, you know, have some people that can comfort you and decide for yourself whether that activity is something you want to continue doing or one time was enough, you know?
Yeah.
I know you mentioned the cost of activities, you know? I think that's a great opportunity to figure out whether it's something that you want to commit all that time and money, because, you know, I think that's a big deterrent for a lot of people. Like, right. What if I try this, I spend all this money, and then realize, oh, I actually don't like this or don't want to do it. So seeking out these communities and groups can be a way to, you know, dispel some of these myths that you hear and learn along the way together.
Yeah, because we all have been in the outdoors multiple times. No one here has ever been attacked by anything, have you?
I've been attacked by a goose.
I've been attacked by a goose.
I did. That was at a local park.
Yeah, see, that can happen walking down the street. From your
house. Have very bad attitudes.
I'll tell a quick story real quick.
Tell us.
So I was up in Yosemite National Park with my ex-girlfriend, and we were in a tent with my kids, and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and she started, "Hey, there's something outside the tent." And I was like, "Yeah, there's a lot of stuff outside." We're in the outdoors. And she wakes me up like about 20 minutes later. "No, Lonzo, there's something out there." And I could hear, boom, 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 and it sounded like, I knew it was a bear. I knew it was, you know.
There's bears there.
And I went out, I checked around, I didn't see anything, you know. All of a sudden I come back to the tent. I'm wide awake at this point in time. I don't want to go back to sleep because I know there's a bear out there. Right. We go back. I'm sitting there within 15, 20 minutes. I hear it again. Boom, 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 boom. Unzip the tent. There it is, black bear.
Just right outside your tent.
But we had left our on our grill.
Ooh. Oh, big mistake.
And we were cooking salmon, which is a big deal.
Oh.
But, you know, I just made a couple noises. The bear just scampered off. Yeah. It was a black bear. It was scared.
Now,
it
had and now you have a great story.
Yeah, and I have a great story that I can tell. But you know what? Here's the thing about it. My kids will still go into the outdoors, and that story is you know, a funny story for them. Of course, it was more fearful for me because I was going to be the one to get eaten or beaten down by the bear.
I had an experience at Capitol Reef National Park. This last year, actually. It was my first time wanting to sleep under the stars, like without a tent or anything. I'm like, I'm going to be real brave. I'm going to put my little kid to sleep in our tent, but I'm going to sleep next to it with my cot and my sleeping bag and nothing else because I want to get like a broad view of the stars. I just want to like take it all in.
Because it's really dark over there.
Oh, you can, so beautiful. The second you get away from like urban light or light pollution. It just opens the whole sky up. So I was just like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. Lo and behold, I didn't realize that the deer in that area were so comfortable with people that they're constantly like five of them, 6 feet away from you at all times. All times.
And they're kind of nocturnal a lot of times.
Yeah, so I was being annoyed all night long by raccoons and bears together, just like tag teaming.
Wow.
I'd unzip my sleeping bag and they're just like, "What? You're supposed to be asleep. I'm just gonna go through these chips."
Yeah. No, one of my favorite memories was camping with my family, and we had our dog with us, and dogs could be off leash at this place. And my dog got out and started chasing something that it heard in the bushes. It comes back smelling terribly.
Oh, no.
And my dog had been sprayed by a skunk. So then the rest of the time we're camping with our dog who just reeks. And I just remember driving home the next day. My dog is in the car with my parents and I'm in a different car. And as we're driving, I have my window down and I could smell the skunk. And I look over and I just see my family just passing us by. And I'm like, oh, we're gonna have to deal with this for a while.
Yeah, well, these are great. So, you know, look, we could tell stories all day, but you know, it has been such a pleasure having you guys on the show. And you know, to hear your story, especially where, you know, you've went from homelessness to the levels that you've been, where you've finished with your master's degree, you've done ecology. I mean, just amazing. And to hear your story as well, it's really a pleasure having you guys. Do you have any parting words for our audience that you would love them to know about the outdoors and encouraging them to go?
Oh, goodness. I'll talk Utah specific. There are so many affinity groups, and all of us are on Instagram. I'm 35, okay, so I guess my words could be for those millennials out there. Get on Instagram, find them. Come find the Latino Outdoors, come find Color the Wasatch, come find Color Outside. There's so many affinity groups here in Utah. You're bound to find a mix of a group that fits with you. And then second would be, you know, just be safe and be gentle with yourself. You know, your outdoor relationship is something that's going to grow. It's a lifelong journey. It's about the journey. It's not about the destination.
Yes. Very good. Esteban, some good parting words for us.
Explore what works for you when trying to connect with nature. I think there's this narrative like you have to act or behave or do certain activities to be outdoorsy. And a lot of times it's exploration, trying to figure out what you do enjoy and what you don't. And along the way, you're going to learn a lot of skills, build a lot of great memories and strengthen your sense of community.
That's great. There's you can start small and just work your way to something that you enjoy. And there's
like
so many
going
things
to the to woods
do.
In a loincloth with your bow.
What?
I don't wear a loincloth when I do it.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture.
Check out our website for more content, information about our guests, and other episodes. You can find all that in a bag of chips at pbsutah.org/roots.
And you'd be doing us a solid if you told all your friends about our show. But until next time, y'all, we are out.